Well, let's start with John Cousins, inventor of a thing called Moodscope. It is a website on which you track and record your own mood from day to day, so you can then look back at a graph and see how it swings to and fro and work out why. That's a fair summary of what it actually is, isn't it?
It's a very good summary, yes. Yes, it is, yeah, yeah. It's something that started because a psychiatrist asked me to record my mood over 3 months and to return and show her how I'd been. And I couldn't find an objective way of doing that. I didn't want to just... I keep a diary, but I didn't want to just write in my diary. I was feeling okay, I was feeling all right, I was feeling terrible. I wanted to put a number to it.
Well, you come out of marketing and advertising. That was your trade, wasn't it? So presumably measuring things was quite important to you, measuring them properly.
I think it was. Yes, I think, you know, being in business, you are taught that if you want to manage something, you should start by measuring it. And also being in marketing and advertising showed me that it's a good idea to, if you want to do that, give somebody a tool which looks nice and feels good. So Moodscope is based on a kind of card game, 20 cards that you rate yourself on each day.
Which are, it is the 20 questions from the American Depression Index, isn't it? I am enthusiastic, hostile,
exactly.
Jittery, all those things. And you'd flip the cards over 1, 2, 3, 4.
Importantly, though, it's not just the bad words. So a lot of depression indexes do measure how bad you're feeling. And what I think differentiates Moodscope is that it also shows you, if you're not feeling bad, how good you're feeling.
Sort of enthusiastic, inspired, whatever those questions
proud,
come up.
Proud, yes, yes.
I have to say, I mean, I have to admit, I come clean and say I've been doing it for a year. And the fascinating thing is that it's quite difficult to lie to the website. That you have to flip these cards over to a particular position, which might be over one way or head to tail. And for some reason, that moment of hesitation, was that part of the idea?
Absolutely, yes. There's a lot to be said for the process of slowing you down. And even though I invented it and I've been recording my mood on it now for 4 years, every day, I sit down and at the computer, and I genuinely don't know what my score is going to be. And I have a kind of feel for what it might be.
Because you answer immediately. You answer straight away. It's
yes, but you're not sitting down and saying, overall, this is how I feel today. Mm. You're getting at it through a whole series of kind of sub-emotions, which we probably wouldn't normally sit down and evaluate.
And some of them are sort of rather parallel. I mean, there's different cards for scared and afraid, and it is quite true you can actually be feeling a bit afraid, but not scared.
I know.
You know,
that's weird, isn't it?
Or you can be feeling jittery, but not afraid.
Yes.
And the way that these words affect you is fascinating. But of course, the other point about it is that it then, if you ask it to, it will send your score on a daily basis to some unfortunate friend who is your buddy.
Yeah, and for some people, that's not something that they would like to do. For others, like me, I'd been using Moodscope myself for about 3 months, and a friend asked me whether he could start seeing my scores. So I said, yeah, sure. So I rebuilt the website so it would send out an email with my score, my mood score in it, the minute that I recorded it. And something profound happened to my own mood as a result of that. It levelled out, and it levelled out at a much higher level.
Was this because when you suddenly tanked down to 10 or 12% or something, one of your buddies, if you have a group of buddies, which you advise, I know, on the website, somebody's bound to ring you and say, what's up, John, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, one of them just used to reply with an email, just with a question mark in it, that's all. And then I would then reply back to him because he was concerned. I would reply to him and explain what had happened. And by the time you've done that, it only takes a couple of sentences, you sort of go, oh, actually, you know, I can see why I might be feeling like that. And instead of it being something horrible that's happened to you for an inexplicable reason, suddenly you've got a cause, and then you can start to tackle it.
And of course, the great thing is when people do plunge into a depression, they do not contact other people and say, I'm a bit low today, mate.
Definitely.
Do they? Because it feels really needy and stupid. Whereas if it's been happened automatically,
yes,
somebody might come back to you.
And it's a bit of a weird feeling the first time that you do go into a depression and you know that your friends are going to know instantly. It's a weird situation.
I mean, you felt relief, did you?
I did. Relief, yes. I mean, the very first time it happened, I actually emailed them all before I'd taken the test to say, I'm going to do the test in a minute and I think it's going to be bad.
But on an ordinary day, and also, I mean, I know what you were diagnosed as originally was bipolar.
Yes.
Massive. I mean, you were in advertising and marketing, and people in advertising, I think, quite often have this huge creative upswing. And
it can happen.
And
yes.
It's not totally uncommon inside the profession. Yeah. But I mean, did you find that when you were on the high ups again, that your friends paid some attention and thought, oh dear, you know, he's gone manic again?
Well, yeah. I'm fortunate in as much as the version of bipolar, the type of bipolar that I have, that doesn't generate out of control highs. My highs tend to be very energetic, very creative. I'll produce a lot of work. I'll come up with lots of new
ideas. They're good highs. Some people have bad highs.
Absolutely. Yes. Mm. Yes.
But it's controlled now. I mean, do you relate the fact? I know you have a history of kind of having a company and selling a company and being miserable and all the rest of it. Has it changed your life? Do you think process of tracking?
Massively, yes, yeah. Because it's given other people a way of understanding me and a way for me to know that I'm understood.
Some people might think that it was just incredibly sort of solipsistic, sort of, oh my God, you know, this whole business of tracking yourself, like people who do food diaries and sort of, you know, check every tiny protein which goes into their body and so on, that it's self-indulgent. Do you ever feel that?
No, because I think, you know, we all do a bit of self-tracking. I mean, there's a whole kind of movement of self-tracking, but at a kind of more general level. I mean, who hasn't weighed themselves? You know, who hasn't?
Me.
Never.
So my trousers get tight. I know I'm getting fatter. It's a very simple process.
Well, that's self-tracking, isn't it?
Yeah, but I can understand that. You know, I mean, I'm not somebody who suffers deeply from depression, but we all have our downs, for sure. And if you can make contact with someone sooner rather than later, then it tends to dissipate. Of course it does, yeah.
Because otherwise it just spirals down, doesn't it? Yes, and you go into that sort of black hole. And
then I think that's more self-indulgent in the long run, isn't it? Because you really are dragging everyone around you down with you if you've already plummeted to the bottom.
Yeah, because it's contagious.
If you're managing to catch it at the beginning, I presume.
Mm, yeah.
Patsy, how does it strike you, this idea?
Well, I'm thinking of soliloquy, actually. I think often that is what a great moment in theatre is, that you come forward with a problem, and as you speak about it, and with Shakespeare, of course, it's so accurate, the language is so concrete in a way, you describe exactly how you're feeling to an audience. When actors do it properly, they say, oh, I feel a bit better. I think what you're doing is actually, I remember once teaching in Soweto, and this wonderful Zulu storyteller was teasing me, and she said, tell me about therapy. Tell me about therapy. You know, you pay somebody to sit and talk to them? And I said, yes. And she said, haven't you got an aunt? And it's in a strange way, you're communicating something that maybe we would have communicated more a few decades ago with people.
I think at heart we are good at it instinctively, but society's got quite complicated, and we've lost the opportunities.
You're also looking back. I mean, I think what is fascinating is to look back and think, hang on, well, last time I scored this low, what had just happened? And you realised I had not had any sleep, you know, I had done such and such, I had had a row with so-and-so, and I was out of it within a day. You know, it was, of course, that's a useful thing as well, isn't it?
You're, definitely.
You've adjusted this.
Because otherwise, when you do get low, when you are depressed, there's a tendency to think that you've always been this way and you always will.
I just wonder how this all strikes an empirical scientist like Paul Broder. Do you believe that this...
I was interested in what sort of overlap there is between your approach and people who take pills. And can you say there are a lot of people who used to take pills who now are quite adequately helped by Moodscope?
We've got a lot of people using Moodscope. I mean, there's 22,000 people have signed up for it. Within that membership, there will be some people who will be on medication.
Yeah.
There'll be some people who are involved in psychotherapy, and some people who are involved, like me, in neither. So I think it's not a standalone solution for everybody, but for some it can work on its own.
And do they report back to you that they were taking pills and now they don't need to?
Some have, Paul, yes.
And I had another question, if I may, and that is, with a group where who are probably having not as much support as one would like, say, for instance, prisoners in prison, I mean, would this be a sort of approach which would be helpful to them, do you think?
I think it could be a super idea. Yes, it's a super idea, yes.
They'd have to have that sort of internet access to do it.
That's true.
But yes, to realise. Because one does sometimes, you sometimes sort of see a particularly low score and you think, is this probably not a good day to pick a fight with the BBC? You know, whatever. I just ask you, how on earth are you funding this? Because it is, at the moment, still free, MoodScope, but you've got 22,000 people to look after.
Yes.
And a computer.
Yes. It's going to have to become a business.
What are you living
pretty
on?
Pretty soon.
What are you living on, John?
And rapidly selling off everything that I owned. But
ask for a small fee when the scores are particularly high.
Right, yes. Lovely
anything
idea.
Over 50, you've got to pay.
Lovely idea, yes. Yeah.
Oh, no, because that would be an incentive to be depressed. That's the last thing you want, yeah. So. Yeah. But no, I mean, but it's we're talking about a labour of love here, aren't we?
Yes, it has been. And it was important to me to prove that it worked, and the best way to do that was to make it free, and to encourage people to sign up and interact with us, and we get loads and loads and loads of feedback from people, which is fantastic because it's helping us kind of shape the whole service. So that in a month or two, when it's time to ask people to consider paying, we hope they will.
And obviously totally confidential unless people choose to tweet their score daily, which I fear may come.